the disciplines that supply chain can bring are in sort of channeling that data and figuring out, well, if I can do everything anywhere, where should I do it?
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, and I am your host, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery, and with me on the show today, I have Lorcan. Lorcan, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, good to be with you. I'm Lorcan Sheehan, based in Dublin, Ireland, and I'm the founder and CEO of Performance Supply Chain. We're a specialist supply chain consultancy company based, actually founded, I suppose, 7 years ago in the middle of the last recession. I suppose it's an interesting time as we potentially head into another one. And we're a sort of a specialist supply chain consultancy with around 25 core consultants and sort of the core team across sort of US, Europe, and we've one lonely soul out in Singapore, working with, I suppose, a range of clients on performance improvement within their supply chains, and cover sort of areas such as healthcare, high tech, do a lot of work in retail, food and beverage, construction and utility. So I suppose across the gamut, really, of industries that we're working with companies. And really what we try and do is, I suppose, is bring people with, I suppose, a lot of functional supply chain experience, people who've run supply chain operations before in multinational environments, and use their experience. Plus, we take a very much a data-driven view, and I suppose it's the the digital supply chain sort of podcast. So it's somewhat appropriate. We take a data-driven view to challenge and support companies in making transformations within their supply chains. So that's us in a nutshell.
That's what you have been doing. And now we are seeing we're end of April, 2020, middle of a global pandemic, supply chains the world over, and you're covering large parts of the world with the US, Europe, and your lonely soul in Singapore. What impacts are you seeing on supply chains?
I suppose it really goes right across, Tom. And I think it's supply chains by their very nature are global. We live in what some people would call an anywhere world, where you can design a product anywhere, make it anywhere, distribute it from anywhere, and then get it to consumers around the world through a myriad of different channels.
Yep.
And we would have seen, obviously, primarily what we're seeing is initially it's a public health issue.
Yep.
And it's having an impact, physical impact on everybody's lives. But I suppose originally we would have seen an impact, when you looked at this first, as though it's a manufacturing impact. It's China, the manufacturing engine for the world, and suddenly China is not able to produce for a couple of months.
Yeah.
But very quickly, it morphs from that, and obviously we've got the rolling impacts on manufacturing now across the globe. But when you stop, producing in the manufacturing engine of the world, suddenly there's a logistics impact. Containers are in the wrong part of the world because there's no flow of materials anymore. So the first in Europe and US you started to see is suddenly there's a lack of container availability in addition to some of the manufacturing pieces. Now you sort of see on top of the manufacturing issue, you have a logistics issue whereby you shut down passenger aircraft and you suddenly take away all the belly capacity for air freight that goes with that. And I know there's a stat, I think at the moment, global air freight capacity is down about 30%, 30-35% on what it was this time last year because of taking out all of that passenger aircraft capacity.
Right, yeah.
And then at the same time as that, we're trying to move huge volumes of PPE, which are sort of bulky paper-based products, which would traditionally go via ocean, are now going on to try and compete for that same air freight capacity. So you have a real bottleneck in the logistics space, not to mention the issues that you have at a more local level in warehouses that can't now physically have the same number of operators working together because of social distancing. You've got potential delays on the road.
Mm.
And then you sort of bubble forward into this, the plan, source, make, deliver, and you have a huge channel impact. So the bulk of non-essential retail brick and mortar is closed.
Yep.
So, you know, if you take it that that would typically account, depending on the sector that you're in, anywhere from 70% to 80 to 90% of the volume of products going through. Suddenly it's like, you know, it's like putting a sort of a large rock in a river. All of that water and all of that product needs to find another way to try and get to market. So you're seeing, you know, online channels coming under severe pressure. And whereas online has been something that's been growing and would continue to grow, the importance of online has suddenly shot up. And I think we're all experiencing where, you know, we're trying to find ways of getting your vegetables and our, you know, groceries, even if you were, even if you were, you know, already receiving those pieces, we're now seeing that slots are not available, that the online, you know, methods that were there, you know, can't really cope. And in the middle of all of this, you have one of the largest online, you know, actors, if you want to call it, Amazon, saying, well, we've got to prioritize essential goods. So there's a raft of products that might have been available online that maybe aren't available anymore because of some of the, you know, the channel impacts that are there. And then you roll sort of two further pieces on, you've got consumption issues. You know, so, well, actually, what I'm consuming now is very different to what I would have consumed before. You know, the restaurant, the hospitality sector is closed. So that's all shifting now to people are buying more for cooking at home. You would have seen that with sort of the lack of flour. And I heard today, actually, a lack of eggs in some places as well. But then there are things, you know, for the things people are consuming more of, there, you know, how important are things like, you know, sports cameras or some of the high tech products that would have been, you know, inverted commas essential in the past. You know, people's priorities have changed. And I think before this is out, Tom, you know, it's fairly clear, you know, when we talked to clients originally, it was okay, well, we've to lock down for 6 weeks or 12 weeks. We'll sort of protect the, you know, we'll protect the supply chain, we'll protect the business, we'll protect our employees, most importantly. Now people are beginning to realize this is with us for, you know, 12 months, possibly 18 months in some form or another. You can't just go into hibernation for that period of time. You need to have some way of actually now proactively dealing with the new realities that are there from a supply chain perspective and start taking action now to ensure that you still have a business when this all emerges.
What kind of actions?
So, you know, so several, you know, there's several actions that you can take. I suppose the first piece is, you know, I think, you know, companies are coming out of, you know, the first couple of weeks was deer in the headlights. Oh my God, what's happening? And, you know, how do you get an assessment of what your real demand is, where that real demand is going to come from? So I think, you know, some of the things we're now seeing companies look at is, you know, trying to make a real assessment of actually, particularly on the channel pieces. You know, we know we'll find ways of manufacturing. We know we'll find ways of distributing. That last connection to the customer is the one that actually is most challenging to figure out. So how do I prepare my business if I had, you know, 10% of my business selling online in the past? We're now educating consumers for probably at least 3 months, maybe 4 months, maybe longer, on how to sort of shop online. So we expect that swing in consumer behavior is going to, some of that's going to stick.
Right.
And companies who have not been as prepared and not been able to scale their online presence and channels will need to do more to be able to do that. So part of that is preparing for that. I suppose in some respects, you could say we're lucky that for many sectors, this pandemic has hit us first in what's traditionally the quietest quarter of the year.
Right, yeah.
Or the quietest couple of quarters of the year. If you look at the restrictions that exist right now in warehouses, in physical logistics and all of those pieces, if this was to be happening, which it most likely will be still happening in Q3, Q4, companies are now saying, actually, how many people can I safely have in my current warehouses?
Yep.
How many people can I have operate? And now what does that do to my capacity to be able to serve my traditional peak in whatever that traditional peak will suddenly be? So people are starting to look at actually, how do I model safely what's available? And now realize that actually I can't hit the same peaks that I would have thought of before. I need to do something different. Physically, staff-wise. I think if this was longer term, you'd be thinking, well, are there automation solutions? Are there other pieces you can do? But you need to look at what can I do now with the time frame that I actually have? And so it's finding out what my demand is and getting an assessment of how that's likely to change, where it's changing from. Physically, how can I service that demand? A lot of companies are also looking at their customers and suppliers and saying, which ones are impacted and which ones will still be there when things start to reopen. So there's an element of risk management that goes with that as well. And for a lot of companies, they're also seeing, you know, they're going to be looking at revenue down. I suppose at a global economic level, we're seeing there's an economic impact that's likely to be here with what people have to spend overall. So if I am now looking at a business which is 10%, 15% or whatever percentage less in Q3, Q4, how do I find the savings within my supply chain that can help me to serve safely, but also do it at a lower cost? And, you know, so the infrastructure that I may have had around delivery fleets, around partners, around various other pieces are things that need to be looked at, I would say, in the shorter term. These are immediate things, Tom, we're starting to see companies take a look at. There's another immediate one with inventory. If you have a seasonal set of product, you may not have a summer season.
Right.
If you look at clothing, if you look at some of those other pieces, you know, you hear of companies with large orders for product that may never sell. So you've got two problems. You have a revenue problem and you have an inventory problem. What do you do with that? Where does that go, and how do you manage all of those pieces? So it's different problems in different places, but now I think companies are emerging from under the rock. They're starting to look at, you know, well, what can I do in the short term?
Yeah.
They also realize that there's a lot of learnings that they need to take into the longer term as well on, you know, resilience and supply chain risk and supply chain. Risk is one of those things that I think supply chain professionals get religion about every 6 or 7 years. When you get a tsunami in Japan or you get an earthquake in Iceland. But the reality is we've been having more man-made risks over the last couple of years with things like Brexit, with things like tariffs, which are creating the equivalent types of barriers. So we're beginning to realize that risk and resilience are things that need to be built in. These are longer term pieces, but you know, there's a whole education piece for us all here on, you know, how do we let ourselves get into this situation?
Yeah.
Not that anybody could have potentially predicted it, but how do we get ourselves to this type of situation? And how do we sort of really take some of those lessons on board for the future?
There's a huge amount to unpack there in what you just said. And looking at some of the people I've been talking to and some of the podcasts I've been doing to date on this topic, it's very clear that we've built up risk in supply chains by trying to make them more efficient. So we got waste out, made the supply chains more efficient, which actually made them far more fragile. And we're seeing a lot of the results of that now, I think, with some of them, you know, having the issues they had where, you know, they didn't have inventory, they weren't stockpiling. And if I think in particular that the healthcare supply chains, for example, were massively hit by this, and they were the ones who needed it most. If we look at manufacturing, the kind of issues they're going to have there are around, you mentioned it earlier, health and safety for employees. If you have a manufacturing line which requires people to be close together, something like the apparel industry or even call centers or something like that, or some of the food production facilities, obviously their productivity, if they can't have people close together for the next 12 or 18 months, then will their productivity fall? Will they have to put in extra lines to make up for the reduced numbers of people on the lines they have? Can they do that? Do they have the space to do that? If not, will their productivity go down? Will they need to raise prices, or will they need to build in more automation? Or, you know, ouch.
Well, you know what, Tom, the good news in supply chain is nobody's figured it all out just yet. You know, you have a situation where you've got, you know, millions of companies around the world making individual decisions about the resources that they apply, you know, in this sort of simple plan, source, make, deliver, more operate and return type of scenario. And, you know, every company, whether they realize it or not, has a supply chain. And, you know, the disciplines that supply chain can bring are in sort of channeling that data and figuring out, well, if I can do everything anywhere, where should I do it? And you can have a couple of levers that you push when you do that. You can have a cost lever. And look, I think a lot of companies really leaned on that cost lever. And for we've had many, many years where, you know, we've been leaning out the supply chain, taking inventory out, taking various other pieces out. But for me, this is less about, in many cases, I know a lot has been talked about recently about, oh, well, we need to be less reliant on China, less reliant on whatever. For me, it's less about actually where you do the manufacturing. It's more about actually how responsive the supply chain can be.
So given all that, what do the supply chains of 2025, you know, the post-COVID world, what do they look like?
If we were having this conversation back last September, October, I think we'd still be talking about climate change. That hasn't gone away. If you look at the various companies that are out there, the amount of waste that still exists within supply chains is very, very significant. So I think the opportunity is there to be able to make progress, and that progress can get us to something that's more resilient, that can get us to something that is more sustainable overall, and still hit some of our cost and other goals. I think the other big change that we will probably continue to see and probably accelerate is that shift in channels. So that's been happening for quite some time. There will be new ways of getting product into consumers' hands. There will be new marketplaces that will exist. There will be new ways that consumers can, I suppose, interact more directly with companies. And I think that's all on the roadmap.
Right.
So if you're a company now figuring out, well, how do I move from here? You know, first thing is surviving. How do I prepare for the next 3, 6, 9 months? And what actions can I take to do that? The second piece is then what are the learnings and capture those learnings now while all of this is fresh in all of our minds, and take those learnings forward to what are we really going to commit to doing differently? And then the next piece is to realize, you know, what's been true forever is that supply chains will always change. You know, as soon as labor rates change, fuel rates change, logistics modes and other pieces change, all of those feed into the mix. So, you know, you need to be on top of, well, what are the signals that are you're looking at that feed into how you drive change in a data-driven manner for your supply chains, so you can service your customers better and you know, meet their needs, not just now, but into the future.
So last question, Lorcan, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you think is important to highlight that we should have brought up or we should have talked about?
I suppose not so much that you haven't asked. I think, you know, the other ingredient maybe, Tom, that is there that I think we all need to take account of is the talent piece. So, you know, the opportunity in supply chain is huge. It's an area I love working in. And, you know, I think the opportunity to influence sort of large company issues, social issues, and various other pieces within supply chain is great. But we're all very used to, you know, one of the traditional questions is did you accidentally end up in supply chain? So I go with them. I'm a reformed accountant, but there's engineers, there's mathematicians, there's others who've all come into supply chain accidentally. I do think if we look at the challenges and how I see supply chain as sort of like the beating heart of an organization, and if it's healthy, it works well. But I think the talent piece is probably the other piece we need to consider, because we can't afford for the next generation of supply chain leaders to just accidentally find supply chain. We somehow need to find a way of educating them on the opportunity, giving them the power to do what they need to do, and attracting the brightest and the best to actually help try and solve some of the problems that we have here. So I think if there's a plea, and that is why I love the podcast and things like this, is to actually make supply chain more accessible, because we can always talk about APIC formulas and various other pieces, but you got to make it real as well in terms of how did that product get on the shelf, and then how do you encourage a generation of people to sort of look at this as the place for your data scientists to go, for your professional logisticians, for the product people, the sustainability people. There's a home for them all here, and a real opportunity to influence and drive change from within supply chain.
Yeah, I think I've had a couple of guests on in the last couple of weeks who've independently made the point that supply chains are likely going to transition from being cost centers to being differentiators. So it's definitely an interesting time to be in supply chain.
Very much so, Tom. Very much so.
Lorcan, that's been fantastic. Thanks a million for coming on the show today. If anyone wants to get in touch with yourself or Performance Supply Chain or anything else, where would you have me direct them?
Yeah, probably the best place is to go to performance.com, and I'll spell that because we spell it slightly differently. It's P-E-R-F-O-R-M-A-N and then S-C for supplychain.com. So performansc.com. It's probably the best place. They can also follow me on Twitter at Lorcan-S, L-O-R-C-A-N-S.
Superb. I'll put those links in the description. Lorcan, thanks a million for your time today. It's been great having a catch-up with you and an in-depth discussion about supply chains.
Absolutely. We'll do it face-to-face when we're allowed again, Tom. So appreciate it. Take care.
Over a pint in a pub somewhere.
Somewhere like that, exactly, indeed. Thank you.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain. Or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application to get new episodes right away as soon as they're published. And also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.